This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yesterday marked the first Yahrzeit, the first anniversary of the death of six hostages who are being labeled as the Beautiful Six. And of course, we're talking about the six hostages who were found in that tunnel in Gaza, having been killed at point-blank range, as far as we know. Hirsch Goldberg, Pauline Carmel Gut, Eden Yerushalmi, Almog Sarusi, who lives in my, his family live in my home city, Or Danino, and Alex Lubanov. And we had a number of events yesterday to mark the first Yahrzeit, the anniversary in the Hebrew calendar of the first year, the date of their deaths. And it was Hirsch Goldberg Pollan's family who wrote a post on Instagram asking people to mark Hirsch's Yahrzeit by doing something to make our complicated world a bit better. It can be something small, big, quiet or loud, private or public. Do it in memory of the Beautiful Six, including our Hirsch. May his memory be for a revolution for goodness. Those are the words of the Hirsch, of the Goldberg Pollan family. And I encourage people to do that, exactly that. Do something, even if it's today, not exactly the day of the anniversary, but do something that will be in their memory. And when I think back, we've had a chance now for the last year to kind of try to process what happened and some of the logic. And here is where I'm at the moment, 1 year later. I'm thinking to myself, what would Hamas have lost if they didn't kill those six at point blank range? And what we remember and what we know is that they were being held in a tunnel in Gaza. The Hamas captives who were holding them had understanding that IDF troops were getting nearer. It seemed that they had nowhere to go. So instead of allowing them to be discovered alive, in terrible state, but nonetheless alive, they were executed at point blank range so that the IDF troops would discover their dead bodies, which happened 2 days after they were killed. And as I say, I'm just wondering the thinking that went through that. So let's assume that they were discovered by the IDF. And I'm assuming that the terrorists would have escaped. They would have got away somehow and just left them there. So there might not necessarily have been any risk, immediate risk to their lives. I'm guessing that the six could have reported, could have been witness, eyewitness to what went on and might have said things which Hamas didn't want to know about. And maybe for that reason they were killed. But I think overall, I don't understand what Hamas stood to lose by allowing them to be discovered alive. What they stood to gain is the heartache and the anxiety and the pure emotion that was generated when those six dead bodies were discovered. And that pain hasn't really subsided over the last year. That pain still remains. We still remember that event. We still remember how close our soldiers were to potentially recovering them alive, and yet they weren't. And we remember what evil we came up against, and we do come up against all the time. But again, I'd like people to have their say about what you think a year later about those events and how they transpired and what good or bad has come out of that, and what may have been if they'd been discovered alive. I'm interested to know, you know, the views of people. I can't not mention the party that took place in Washington on Monday, even though it's not directly relevant to what we're discussing. But there are a few things which I think are relevant. First of all, it was very nauseating for me to watch the party of parents, as they like to call the European Union's leaders who came to the White House to support the Ukrainian effort, and Volodymyr Zelensky, who was very well dressed up this time and well presented. I didn't find it a very attractive viewing. I felt that the European Union leaders allowed themselves to be patronized by Trump. I don't want people to hear about what a nice guy I am, or to be asked where I get my good tan from. I don't think any of that's really relevant to what was going on around the table. And it was just, for me, quite nauseating. But I think there were two critical points that came out for me. The first of which was that Trump said, oh, he solved all of these wars. And the only war that he hasn't solved up until now is the Russia-Ukraine war. I think he forgot that we have another war going on, which yet has to be resolved. And you know, in spite of President Trump's interventions and indeed some positive impact that he's had on the state of this war, but that's not resolved by any stretch of the imagination. I think the other point is that even though there was a feeling that the European Union leaders had come along to support Ukraine, and that's why they were called the parents, I think that we've got that all wrong. I think the European Union leaders came along to support themselves and to be concerned about themselves, because they know that Ukraine is between them and a potential disaster with Russia. And if the Ukrainian issue isn't resolved, then it brings the problem right onto the doorstep of the European Union and those countries who were represented. And it was quite amusing for me to read that President Trump had phoned Viktor Orban of Hungary to try to get him to be more supportive of the idea of Ukraine joining the European Union, because Trump is not going to allow Ukraine to join NATO, which is what Ukraine really wants. So he's trying to promote the idea of them, of Ukraine joining the European Union. And Prime Minister Viktor Orban of Hungary has said no, he doesn't think that that's going to help. And it certainly won't give the security guarantees that Ukraine is seeking right now. But I think more important than that, it brings the European Union right onto the doorstep of Russia. And even though the European Union does have certain borders with Russia, particularly in the Scandinavian area, but the border with Ukraine is way more substantial. And I can't see any prospect of Ukraine being allowed to join the European Union for that reason. And that's exactly why the parents all turned up, to try and protect their own backs, because they know what potentially could happen if the Ukrainian situation doesn't get properly resolved.
Very, very interesting. And of course, to juxtapose that against what is the way in which the situation in Israel and Gaza is being handled is makes it very interesting. The Prime Minister is reported to be weighing up a possible ceasefire. That's in spite of publicly saying that he will not consider a partial hostage deal. Plans to escalate the IDF operations in Gaza are gathering pace, though. What can we expect next?
Well, we've already been told that 60,000 IDF reservists are to be called up in the coming days ahead of the operation that's now being dubbed Gideon's Chariots 2, because we already had Gideon's Chariots before, and this will be the next phase of Gideon's Chariots, which will be some sort of an operation in Gaza City, as we understand things. So already the plan is to call up 60,000 reservists, and I'm not really quite sure what the whole strategy is behind the way in which the government is operating right now. But there does seem to be some thinking behind the scenes about what they're doing. On the one hand, strength. On the one hand, the stick, which says, we're calling up our reservists. We have our plans, which have been approved now by the Minister of Defense, to go into Gaza City. We've already allowed tents to go into Gaza to start moving civilians. This operation is going ahead. There's no potential way of stopping it at this moment. That it's all hands on deck, and we are moving forward to Gideon's Chariots 2, which will involve a major operation in Gaza City, and who knows what may come out of that. On the other hand, there are lots and lots of rumors from behind the scenes. Sorry, before we say about rumors behind the scenes, the government is formally saying that they are not willing to contemplate the idea of a partial hostage release. It's either release all 50 hostages and we will stop the war finally, or nothing. So we hear from behind the scenes that the Prime Minister is indeed considering the possibility of a partial hostage release and therefore a potential ceasefire arrangement that could last 60 days, as we discussed yesterday, just in order to get any hostage that we can get our hands on out of Gaza. And we know how badly people are being treated in Gaza, and how serious the situation is for those hostages, many of whom are on dire condition. And so I just wonder whether the stick that's being used through the Gaza operation, through Gideon's Chariots 2, which is now gaining momentum, is potentially not designed to convince Hamas further that they need to enter into a permanent ceasefire.
That's my
sense.
Push it
off the edge. So they're already showing signs of willingness to a compromise, because the deal that they've now authorized, by their own admission, is 98% of the deal that Israel had previously authorized and that was rejected by Hamas. All of a sudden now, for reasons which are not all that clear, they are willing to say yes. And they said yes pretty quickly. And the question is, what made them say yes so quickly? And can we push that even further to make them say yes to something which is even better, from our perspective, even greater than this partial deal? So I'm just wondering whether that's the strategy, whether we're not trying to push this idea of an operation in Gaza as far as we possibly can to make the impact of the stick as great as possible, in order to ultimately get a better outcome from the hostage release and potentially a longer term cessation of hostilities. I'm speculating that might be the strategy.
I certainly agree with you. And reading about how long, calling up 60,000 and then training them and then moving, making sure that the humanitarian areas are set up. I mean, they're talking about October, and that certainly gives it enough time to say, we're doing all of this, it's happening, so you've got a short time to resolve this. That is my sense as well. Anthony, I wanted to quickly ask you about the Australian situation, because Israel has expelled Australian diplomats after Australia refused to grant an Israeli Knesset member a visa. Is this a threat to diplomatic relations between the two countries?
I think it is potentially a threat. And it's interesting how Israel has played this. So the diplomatic representatives who have been expelled from Israel are not members of the diplomatic staff to Israel in the Israeli embassy, in the Australian embassy in Israel. Instead, Israel has revoked the visas of Australia's diplomatic representatives to the Palestinian Authority. They are people who also live in Israel and who also need visas to live in Israel, even though they are working with the Palestinian Authority and were not with Israel. But they nonetheless are here and being hosted by Israel. And therefore, it was deemed appropriate as a response to what happened with Simcha Rotman. Whatever you think about him, he's a member of Knesset, and he wanted to visit Israel, to visit Australia, and he was not allowed to visit Australia. They did not grant him a visa. And so Israel said, what we're going to do next? And I think that this is a very elegant way of responding, not by expelling any members of the Australian team to represent Australia in Israel, but rather those who are representatives to the Palestinian Authority. Now, it has generated a lot of response from Australia. The Australian Foreign Minister Penny Wong was very, very critical of this response, and she said that the Netanyahu government is isolating Israel from the international community. And let's also link it to the war of words that's currently going on between Israel and France, and particularly between Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Macron, where the Prime Minister has said that they will take diplomatic action against France for declaring that they will support the establishment of a Palestinian state. So Israel is now on the front foot in terms of diplomatic response to countries who come out and state that they will support the establishment of a Palestinian state. If we're starting with France, then I think we've got a lot of work to do, because France is not the only country out there who has made the statement. So why pick out France when we could also pick out Canada, and we could pick out Norway, and we could pick out the UK, and we have a whole long list of countries, all of whom have adopted, New Zealand, for example, adopted a similar strategy and a similar position. If we're going to isolate ourselves against countries that have declared that they will support a Palestinian state, then there is a lot to do in order to make that policy consistent. Does that risk Israel being more isolated in the international community? Potentially so. Does that mean it's a bad decision? I don't know. I mean, let's ask the listeners out there, what do you guys think? Because I think there are a number of different aspects. First of all, there is a Jewish community in Australia and in other countries around the world, and Israel will never give up on the Jewish communities around the world. So to the extent that diplomatic relations might be damaged and they may affect the standing of the Jews in that country, Israel would be loath to take an action like that. Having said that, I think there is a statement to be made about what is going on in the international community. These countries are coming out and making statements about supporting a Palestinian state, which is a completely irrational statement, because there is no Palestinian state to support. So therefore, the statement is simply an anti-Israel kind of statement. There is nothing positive that you can bring out of that. If it's an anti-Israel statement, we need to stand up and be counted. We need to stand up and say, it's not okay, we're going to take action against you. But we could potentially be very much more isolated. So those are the considerations. I don't know what the right answers are, but I hope that people out there have some views and will let us know what they think.
Yeah, let us know. 0618951019. That's where we leave it. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch Anthony tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.